Hello, and welcome to Teacher Tales, a podcast from the spirit of teaching. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I invite you to join me and my guests as we get curious, explore, discover, and learn more about what is really at the heart of teaching. In each episode, we will hear the story of a teacher, what called them to teach, what are their greatest joys and challenges in teaching, what inspires them, and what are their hopes, dreams, and vision for the education of children. We will learn more about the greatest lessons they have taught and also the greatest lessons they have learned. No checklists, no standards, no reports, no paperwork, and no data. Just stories from their hearts to our hearts on a journey to celebrate what really matters in the true spirit of teaching. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Teacher Tales. I know it's been a while since we've released a podcast, but teachers are busy people and got a lot of other things going on in the world right now. So I'm glad you're back. And if any of you have a nomination or you'd like to self-recommend or nominate for being a guest here on Teacher Tales, I welcome it because we do need to hear your stories and raise awareness about teaching and how hard teachers work and how valuable they are. So today I have a very special guest to welcome everybody back to listening about teacher stories. And I'm going to let her introduce herself and then we'll take a little bit deeper dive into her story.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Below Donaldson. I live in Louisville, Kentucky. I teach at a Spanish immersion school here in Louisville, and I teach third grade, so the little guys.
Oh, third grade. I love elementary school teachers. I think when I started, if there had been more elementary school programs and languages, I would have been in elementary. Not that I don't love high school, but I've taught every grade level, you know, so you find what's special about each grade level, no matter where you're teaching. So I want to start with congratulating you again on becoming the Teacher of the Year for SCOLT, the Southern Conference on Language Teaching, a regional conference for world language professionals. And you are going on to the national competition and representing SCOLT very well. We are very excited to have you chosen. And so that says a lot about who you are and your dedication to teaching. But you want to tell us a little bit more about why you became a teacher, maybe?
Absolutely. And thank you so much. I am not a traditional teacher. So I always like to say to people that it's never too late to join the profession. We can use as many great teachers as we can get. I actually majored in corporate communication and political science in college. I applied to law school and I also applied to Teach for America. And so I deferred law school and said, you know, I'll give this teaching thing a try for 2 years. And that was 11 years ago. And so I started teaching on the southwest side of Chicago, and I didn't know what I was doing at all. So I always give a lot of grace to our first year teachers. And I had a really great mentor. Her name was Eileen Whalen, and she was an interventionist, but they had her in my classroom, and I would not be able to do anything without her guidance. And so I taught first grade there. And I remember on the first day of school, I had a new student who had never been to school before. And she was crying and she's like, I want my mom. And I just thought, oh my gosh, me too. I don't know what I'm doing here at all. And so I taught first grade there for 3 years. And then I ended up meeting my husband and that brought me back to Kentucky. And I taught in a district for 3 years, a little outside of where I live. And I taught third grade there. And I got to work with some ESL students, but my passion's always been working with Spanish speakers. My parents are from Argentina, and I just have a lot of passion and love for language learners. And I was volunteering at what's called the Backside of the Track Learning Center, and it's dedicated to supporting equine workers and their family. In Louisville, Kentucky, we have Churchill Downs, which is the huge racetrack. And we have a lot of migrant workers that come and work with the horses there. And I had heard about an opening at an immersion school and applied there. And that's where I've been the last 5 years. And my family actually ended up in Kentucky from Argentina through the equine industry. My grandmother was a seamstress and she would sew the blinders for horses and like the coverings for in between races. And her equine company was in California, where I was born. And they moved to Mount Sterling, Kentucky, which is like a teeny tiny town. And that's how a bunch of Argentinians ended up in Eastern Kentucky, where I grew up. So that's kind of how I started teaching. It's not a traditional path, but I always tell people that it's never too late, especially if you are majoring in something else and you kind of have that itch. There's tons of alternative certification routes. And so I think it's a really great way to get people to join.
That's a great story. And I love the because I was looking at some of the community projects that you've done, and it's really raising awareness about the workers who come from Spanish-speaking countries, the Latinos that are working in the equine industry and taking your students on field trips and stuff and really connecting them to the community. So that must be very rewarding. And what is like the biggest thing that your students learn from that, or that you've learned from them?
I think my big push each year, I always try and pick one thing I want to get better at. And I talked a little bit about this at school. And so the framework for teaching is huge. And there's all these little nuanced things that, you have to be exemplar in. And so I just try and pick one thing that I really want to get better at. And this year, I've really wanted to get better at giving my kids authentic experiences outside of the classroom of especially with just language learning, I wanted them to have real world experiences. And one of those was this year we studied the Chicano movement. And, we talk a lot about the civil rights movement, but I wanted them to see how that inspires other minority groups to really advocate for themselves. And so we talked about the Chicano movement and how that really pushed for sustainable farming and equal rights for our farm workers. And that kind of led us to talking a little bit more about equine, because that's our big, economic push in Kentucky. And so just talking about threading that, Spanish speaking piece in there. And the kids were blown away. So we had a trainer come and they led the talk in bilingually. So the trainer came and he brought his assistant. And the kids just were blown away with the work that goes into it. They came at 10 o'clock in the morning and they had said, "Oh yeah, our day is wrapping up. We started at 3." And so the kids were just like, "Wow, I can't believe they wake up that early." And so it was really neat for the kids to just kind of see that it's accessible to everyone too, because I think a lot of times going to the track is this really ritzy, expensive experience. And I think for the kids to see, the work that goes into making that possible for people to go to a horse race and to also see that it's not just the glitz and glam, that there's actually like grit and hard work that goes in on the backside of things. And so I think giving the kids that experience was really meaningful. A lot of them will live here their whole life and never go to see a race. And that was another thing when I taught in Chicago too, is that we took the kids out and we went into the city to do different experiences. We want them to see like the ballet, and the kids thought that Lake Michigan was the ocean. And just a lot of teachers don't like taking kids on field trips, and I get that because it is stressful. It is hard, but I just see so much value, and that would be my encouragement to any teacher is do the work, because our kids need authentic experiences. And we ask them to write personal narratives, but if you aren't giving kids experiences, then what are they going to write about? And so just getting to have the kids have those experiences has been really meaningful.
I love that. And it's really amazing how the world works, how the universe works, because I was just doing a book fair yesterday, and a former student of mine and her family just surprised me, as I'm sitting there at the table and stuff. And they were there because when I was teaching, I took student groups to Europe, and she and both her parents went on a couple of trips with us. And what she kept telling me yesterday was exactly what you're saying, that impact of the authentic experiences. Her family is Hispanic. They're from Cuba. They all, they're fluent in Spanish. She was fluent in Spanish. But she said, the field trips you took us on and the way you made us aware of the world around us and make those connections had such a huge impact on me. And so it sounds like you're doing the same thing with your students, and that's really important. And it's a shame that a lot of districts are putting restrictions on taking kids on field trips, but inviting them in as guest speakers too. That's a great way to do it. And I think, so many kids are like, school is boring. School, I haven't, there's nothing meaningful at school for me, but it sounds like you're really turning them around and getting them excited about all the possibilities in their world around them. So,
I
congratulations.
hope so. And that is one thing about the teaching profession is that you plant seeds and you never really know what's going to come from that. And so sometimes it's a thankless job, but I am always encouraged to hear how those experiences play out later in life. And so I think if a lot more of our teachers would just stick with it and understand, that you will get to see, maybe not in your lifetime, but there will be changes. And we got to have a small part of that. And I think that's the best job in the world.
I would agree wholeheartedly. And I know that you said something about your parents coming from Argentina. So you're a second generation born here. Were you raised speaking Spanish in the home?
Yes, actually, so it's really funny. Both my parents are from Argentina. My dad is from Buenos Aires, the capital, and my mom's from Rosario. I always like to say that's where Messi's from, because then everyone's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But they were neighbors in an Argentinian neighborhood in California. So they didn't meet in Argentina. They met in the United States. They dated for 3 months and got married, which blows my mind. They're still married 40 plus years. And so my siblings and I are all first generation Americans. And we did grow up speaking Spanish. And we had, which is very common in Latino culture, is we had, a multi-generational household. My grandmother lived with us for a while. And we had a lot of, cousins that would come and stay and things like that. And so it's been really fun to try and continue those traditions with my own small family. I have one son, he's almost two. And so we speak to him in Spanish, and it's just really fun to watch him. He picks the words that are easiest for him to say. So, zapatos is hard, so he calls them shoes. But in one conversation, he'll say mas, mas, and then turn to me and say need a snack. So it's a fun, trying to see, what sticks with him. But my hope is that he will also be bilingual.
And what a rich experience. I mean, having, this culture, two cultures, two languages. And this connection with the equine industry, and now you're in Louisville and you're making connections there and making connections for your students. I mean, it really has been a rich experience for you, and I'm sure you're passing that on to your students. So, and I'm sure you also see, you mentioned something about ESL, and I know that they really need that extra support and understanding and compassion from someone who does understand and has whose life has been enriched the same way, or had maybe even some of the same challenges. So I know at SCOLT you mentioned about reading. So you have a great passion about reading and how important it is. So you want to share a little bit of what you talked about, so that everyone can hear what you had to say about reading?
Absolutely. But before I pivot to that, I did want to say one thing that has been really rewarding is that I have been able to build a partnership with a school in Argentina where my third cousins go to school. And so our kids have seen a lot of value in seeing that they're able to speak with another group. But what's been really great is they're learning English at this Argentinian school. And they think, their teacher shared with me that, oh, no one values our culture. It's all about English. It's all about, the American way. And so being able to see another group of kids their age learn their language and learn about their culture has been really rewarding for everyone. And we got to share, the traditional drink in Argentina is mate, it's a tea. And we had a night where we made mate tea bags to sell to raise money for our school. And we made alfajores, which are Argentinian cookies. And so that was really
Delicious.
neat for the kids to see in Argentina, okay, my culture matters too. And for our kids here to see, oh my gosh, like other people care about what we're doing. So that's been really cool. But to talk about literacy, gosh, I could talk forever about the importance of reading. But I did mention at school is that I was a struggling reader. I did not learn to read until second grade, which statistically, if you're not reading by the end of third grade, it's likely that you won't read at all. And so I have a huge passion for making sure that all of our kids learn to read. In our society, I shared at school that 65% of children are reading below grade level. And so one thing that I've learned through, I'm a dyslexia certified teacher as well, is that background knowledge is the greatest asset for whether a child will learn to read. So it's kind of having a lot of understanding about how the world works, the science, the sciences, the art, music, culture, all of that works together so that when you get a text that's new, your brain is accessing all of those things at once to make meaning. And so I talked a little bit about how our world language programs are really great because they expose our children to all of those different things. And it's called the Knowledge Matters Campaign. And it's a campaign that works to bring awareness to how your brain learns to read and the importance of building background knowledge. And so as of today, 39 states and the District of Columbia have adopted what are called knowledge building curriculums. They're trying to shift so that in this country, we kind of have a similar pace that all students are learning about certain topics to help them become fluent readers. And there have been millions of dollars spent on these curriculums so that kids are starting to learn background knowledge and use that to understand reading as opposed to teaching strategy-based reading, which is you read a text, what's the main idea? And it's more so we're learning all about frogs right now. We're going to learn all about different types of frogs. And in that, they embed those strategies of, you know, reading for context clues, looking for the like synonyms and antonyms, looking for prefixes and suffixes. It's now all embedded into a content, something that's actually kids can anchor onto. And so our world language programs do all of that. And so I think a lot of times people think, oh, you know, my kid can't read. Why do they need to learn another language? And it actually not only helps them become a literate reader in their native language, if it's English or whatever it might be, it also accelerates their reading ability. So that's pretty cool.
It is. And if, you know, the powers that be that make these decisions would just get that they would understand that if you have a student learning another language, I mean, it's just doubling your impact, doubling your investment in education. And, you know, whereas I know in our district, when we got a new superintendent, he had to do budget cuts. And of course, he looked at languages first, and he cut the Spanish in the elementary schools and cut teachers back at the high schools because he felt that they were expendable and not really having an impact. And that's not true. And even what you were describing earlier about your field trips and making those connections for the kids to authentic, you know, sources and authentic experiences, that is a huge contributor to developing literacy. And so, you know, it's just a little bit more natural way to go about it instead of, I think sometimes we do a little disservice in education in that we have to develop a set of steps to follow or a checklist to check off. And I feel that if you go more with your gut and how you learned and how you figured things out, then, you know, apply some of those things. And it probably is going to work for other human beings that are trying to learn as well.
So. That's true. One thing that I've really been working on this year, and well, I guess over the last 3 years, is I'm actually classified as what they call a Spanish literacy teacher. So I teach Spanish, but through literacy, we do read alouds, and kids are engaged in different reading type activities. So if you're an elementary school teacher, I'm sure you've heard of the Daily Five. Are they listening to reading, writing about their reading, you know, doing word work? And that's the approach I take when I'm teaching a world language. And so it's kind of all encompassing to that literacy block. But one thing I've really been working on is they have standardized reading levels. So they, you know, you might see the Lexile, DRA, or Fontes and Pinnell are the three big ones that reading A to Z, and they correlate with grade level benchmarks. And so we benchmark in English all the time. We, give the kids a beginning, middle, and end of the year reading assessment. And we have grade level expectations that are like national norms. And so what I've been working on is looking at the ACTFL rubrics and what their descriptors are of, the reading, like at this level, students will be able to read common phrases and sentences. And I have been able to use that kind of descriptor to level with Fontes and Pinnell. And so one thing I've done is push for our school to do running records where we assess the kids in reading three times a year against those Fontes and Pinnell letters, like they're doing in English. And so that we can actually track like apples to apples, like you're reading at this level in English, this is the exact same level you're reading at in Spanish. And to try and like show, how that reading ability is not only increasing in the target language, but in English at the same time, in a way that makes sense to other teachers, because I think a lot of times we use the ACTFL rubric. So novice low doesn't really make sense to me as a English speaking teacher when I'm, using the letter M, for example. I think that's our goal in third grade. And so trying to show, here's that letter in English, now here's that letter in Spanish, like these two things match up. And so I actually at Advocacy Days got to talk with some people at the Department of Education, and I just asked them, like, are there any pushes that we're going to be able to really be able to compare language learning in a way that's systematically the same in English, in a way that would really be able to compare apples to apples, which right now that doesn't exist. So.
And so what did they say?
They said, we haven't seen that before. And I'm thinking, well, I have a strategy. We can do it. So I would love to see my next, big ask from ACTFL would be, could you set out the standardized, like novice low is a letter A in the Fontes and Pinnell or whatever, because it's a range. So I'd love to see that, because then we could really, I feel like, have that leverage to push for our programs, because it would be a way to track, really in a way that makes sense to everyone, because it would be systematically the same.
Mm-hmm. So when you said you were a struggling reader, so what was it that turned you around? Was there a teacher? Was it a certain strategy or?
Well, now I know as a teacher what they were doing, but the first book I ever read, and I shared, it's I Scream, You Scream, We All Scream for Ice Cream. And I was in an intervention group, and it was really, now I know, like targeted phonics instruction, like, the making those long vowel sounds, like the vowel teens is what we call them, like two E's make E, EA can also make E. And making that connection. And then also being able to read in Spanish just really translated. Once I could pick up reading in English, I'm like, oh, I just sound out the words. That's easy. And now I'm like, whoa, I'm reading in a second language. So just really having that core phonics instruction, which we do teach in our world language classrooms too, letter sounds and how the blends work together.
I mean, it seems logical when you look at, Bloom's taxonomy, compare and contrast is, at least above comprehension, and we tend to, in education, in my opinion, stay at the comprehension level. Just what can the kids regurgitate? What can they memorize? And then, spit back at us. But comparing and contrasting, I mean, that's what the brain is designed to do, is to compare and contrast and find the differences first, which is amazing, and then we find the similarities. So so making those comparisons, we're giving the kids an opportunity to make their brain work twice as hard to make those connections and figure things out. So
well, at least in Spanish, it's I know every world language is different, but looking for those cognates, mm-hmm. and looking for prefixes and suffixes has really transferred across the two content areas, like English reading and reading in Spanish, because the kids are really picking up a lot more vocabulary and, breaking up, chunking out words. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, wait a minute, this looks like a word I know in English. And so making those connections is really fun.
It is aha moments.
Yes. And then the false cognates, we're always like, hold on a minute. We talk about, for being embarrassed, but then, embarazadas, I'm pregnant. So,
Exactly.
those are fun too. The kids like to pick those out and
Yeah,
say, wait a minute, that one's not right.
the falsos amigos, we'd
Yes.
call them. Yes. And they really make that connection, and then next thing you know, their proficiency and their understanding is growing greatly when they figure that out, that they can look for those words and make those connections.
My program model is really unique in that we're not technically a full immersion school. We have, they had in the past been like a true 50-50, but they saw a dip in test scores. And so they've really transitioned to a model that looks different in every grade, but at least in third grade, we're in a block model. So I have the kids for Spanish, 5 days a week for 60 minutes in a block. And then they have math and they have reading. And so just even the if you're really intentional with the planning and teaching, I teach academic vocabulary first and like a read aloud. We do it through literature. And then I have a truly differentiated block of really working on interpersonal communication. And that we just took the stamp test. And I mean, their scores are fantastic. Just seeing that I'm really intentional about what I'm teaching mirrors the English teacher. So right now she's teaching about water conservation. And so that's our academic focus. But then interpersonally, the kids are really working on weather, like learning to have conversations about the weather, the seasons, what they like to do. And so we try and hit both, making sure that they have academic vocabulary and then also interpersonal communication. Because I think a lot of times we focus on just the talk about what you like to do for fun. And, I really want to push our kids to also be able to hold space in academic settings too.
Or what I find too is in some programs they really focus on the academic language and making the kids learn these words that are already highlighted in their science textbook, in bold, what they should be learning, but we don't give them the opportunity to talk to someone else about it. Like you said, that interpersonal communication, that's really what kids want to do. They want to be able to talk to somebody else, not just kids, adults, everybody. That's how we make the connections, is through that interpersonal conversation that we have with someone else. Because, I mean, that's part of the whole message of my book, Learning Lessons, is we're both teachers and learners at the same time. We're all making connections with each other because I have, something to teach you, and you have something to teach me, and reciprocal learning, and that's how we keep taking a step forward and growing and becoming better human beings. So,
Yeah, I agree. And I previously had taught math and science in Spanish. And then, like I said, they pivoted our program to say, we are not seeing like really great math outcomes. We're going to switch and try this new model. And we've been doing that for the last 3 years. And I have seen a huge growth in just even, our standards tests that we take at the state level. But then in my sphere, the stamp scores are wonderful, in this model approach. So I think it's important that, there's when you're advocating for a world language, that it can look different everywhere. But if we are really intentional about what we do with our kids, we can see gains across the whole child.
exactly. I agree. So we just have a couple of minutes here. What advice would you have to a new teacher?
I think it goes back to what I mentioned earlier. And I wouldn't say I'm seasoned because I feel like I'm still learning a lot, but I every year just pick that one thing that I want to get better at. And knowing that I'm not going to be great at everything, but I think any new teacher, just pick one thing that you really want to work on. Just if it's your classroom management, which should be probably first, pick that and work on that. If you want to get better at assessments, that can be your focus for a year. And that we're always learning. And it doesn't matter how long you've been teaching, you're still working on something new.
That is so true. So true. I'm pretty old, and so I'm still learning, and I'm grateful for every day. I mean, even at the book festival yesterday, I was like, wow, there are a lot of authors, a lot of people have things to say on a lot of different topics, and that's amazing, because that's what makes the world go round, is that we're all different, But we're also all the same, and we all have stories, and we need to share our stories. So thought it was great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I
I got.
love to say I'm always reading something to make me a better teacher and then something for fun. And so I'm always trying. Right now, I'm reading a book on just how kids learn to read in a second language. And it's about like DLI programs and the different ways it might look. And then for fun, I'm just reading. My book club always has new books, so.
Yeah, that's good. You have to fill your cup too, personally as well as professionally. So that's a good practice. Another tip for new teachers, that one thing, practice, work on that, but also don't forget to fill your own cup and make yourself feel fulfilled in a personal way and rewarding way. Not always putting everything into teaching in the kids. So,
Exactly.
yeah. Well, Stephanie, this has been wonderful to talk to you, and I wish you luck in the next level at ACFL in November. And I want to do a shout out to Alfonso as well, because I know he really is very proud of Kentucky World Language Teachers, as he should be. I've been to KWLA many times and presented, and I have a lot of teacher friends there. So it's a great state, great world language teachers, and Alfonso's really great too. So you're among very good company. So.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me join you today just to talk about the things that I love.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, and you're going to inspire a bunch of other teachers to remember what they love about teaching.
Hello again, everyone. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I'd like to invite you to nominate a teacher to be a guest on the podcast and to share their story. All you have to do is go to www.spiritofteaching.org and fill out the nomination form. Again, that's www.spiritofteaching.org. Also, please share, rate, and give some feedback to help us better serve you in the spirit of teaching. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to having you back next time on Teacher Tales.